Dan Holden is a Comcast fellow and chief scientist for Denver-based Comcast Media Center. In this position, Dan is responsible for leading the advanced engineering department and providing technical and strategic leadership for the CMC. Dan, a 16-year veteran of television, joined the Comcast Media Center in 2002 as a video over IP engineer. Since then, he has led the engineering efforts for CMC's content distribution platforms, including advanced advertising, video on demand, broadband television, and user-generated content. Dan's current focus at CMC includes defining its strategic direction with concentration on advanced advertising, video compression, metadata, and content delivery. Prior to joining Comcast, Dan served as the architect for AT&T Broadband's telephony provisioning systems. Beforehand, he served on the engineering team for Cable Labs as a senior consultant for GoTo Broadband, and also served as the CIO of WeatherPlus and led the transmission manager efforts for Encoda Systems. He holds an MS and BS in computer science from Regis University and is working on an MBA in his spare time, right, from the University of Denver. Dan is actively involved with SMPTE and the Society of Cable and Television Engineers. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Holden.
Thank you. Glad to be here. It's kind of interesting to be coming in front of a group of broadcasters. I thought that last discussion was very interesting. And as we look at 3D television, I think your spectrum and how you allocate that spectrum is really going to start to come into effect. So there's a lot of talk today about 3D television and the capability to use a current, let's say, 15 megabit MPEG-2 stream to deliver it. We're not finding that in cable. So in cable, we've been focused on frame-compatible technology, which effectively means to take the output of the left camera, the right camera, and composite them on a single frame of video and distribute that to our set-top boxes. Today, we're doing that at 18.75 megabits. As we transition from MPEG-2 into AVC, we hope to bring that number down to about 11.25 megabits. So what I'm going to try to do is go through this quickly to get you back on track. So if we look at the impact of 3D televisions, the first thing we have to do is look at the consumer electronic divisions. They're the ones that are really trying to drive 3D technology into the home. So all of the new televisions that are coming out, the CE manufacturers see an opportunity to get an upsell, to move that HDTV that somebody just bought and put into the living room, to get it out and to get a new CE device into the living room. What they've noticed is that 1080p really didn't sell. So when you start talking about higher resolution, most consumers don't really understand what that means. So 1080p wasn't a big upsell. HD, on the other hand, is something that consumers can actually get their arms around. If you go to Google Trends, you'll notice that inside of Google Trends, they've been tracking what consumers are searching for, and consumers have a much more higher interest in 3D than they do in HD. And for those in the industry, that should really mean something. So if we look at studios see it as an opportunity to generate more revenue for their movie content. So every studio that's out there, when they take their movie and they put it into the theater, they're getting an upsell of anywhere from $3 to $5 on that movie by shooting it in 3D. So that $3 to $5 is to cover the cost of the glasses and to cover the cost of the production, the post-production, et cetera, for the 3D technologies. Inside of cable, our CTO has basically said that we believe 3D television delivered to the home may be a way for us to differentiate ourselves from our competition. So that's where we're headed with the technology. So how many different types of 3D television are out there? Well, there's actually quite a few. Anaglyph has been around for a long time. And with anaglyph technology, you probably recognize it from these old paper glasses that kind of look like this. and they have different color lenses in them. So what you can see, if you can see all the way in the back, is that each of these glasses filter a part of the color spectrum out, and they're different depending on what the movie is going to be. The next thing I have on here is stereoscopic, and that's what we're focused on today. So inside of the stereoscopic sort of technologies, we can break it up and we can talk about active and passive from the display technologies. So if we talk about passive technology, it's wearing glasses that look something like this. And these are the same Real-D glasses that you find in the movie theater. These probably aren't going to make their way into the home. And the reason for that is that televisions are too expensive today. So what they do is they layer a film over the top of the television, and they put these glasses so that they're circular polarized. So one's clockwise and one is counterclockwise. And they have to layer a film on top of that television, and every other line then effectively becomes clockwise or counterclockwise. So you're going to lose half the resolution of that display by doing it. But this type of technology may make its way into bars or into restaurants or into public places. And the reason is that the cost of this pair of glasses is less than $2. Whereas when we move into the active shutter glasses, now we're moving up to about $160 per pair of glasses. And each of these glasses are proprietary. So the ones that I'm holding in my hand only work with Sony televisions. So if we were to have a football party, and if you were to invite me over and say, bring your own glasses, well, if you've got a Samsung TV, my glasses aren't going to work. So if we're talking about the Super Bowl and you invite 10 of your friends over, does that imply you're going to have to spend $1,600 in glasses? Would you take this $160 pair of glasses and hand it to your 5-year-old son and say, go watch television? I don't think so. So there's some challenges just in this space. Now, the last thing that I have on this deck is autostereoscopic. So with autostereoscopic, what they've tried to do is get rid of the glasses. This technology actually works today. It's probably going to be deployed, but it'll be used for digital signage. And the problem with autostereoscopic technology is that there's a bunch of holes in the depth of field. So if you stand in front of it for a few seconds or a minute, you can get that 3D effect. But if you were to try to watch a whole movie, not going to work. Now, some manufacturers have already come out with this autostereoscopic technology. I think about 3 weeks ago, there was a big announcement that one manufacturer said, we've got it working. Kind of works, but you got to sit exactly in one spot. So let's say that you have to sit 3 feet from the television right in the middle. So now you're back to the same thing of how's a whole family going to sit in that one spot where you're going to get that good field of vision. So we think it's probably going to be closer to 5 years before we're going to see autostereoscopic actually become something real. So 3D Live, how does this work? So if you notice this camera up in the upper right-hand corner, this is different than what Sony talked about earlier. This is a Panasonic camera where they've effectively put two lenses on a single body. It's really meant more as a prosumer-grade camera. It's about $22,000. But all of this 3D content, effectively what you need are two cameras to actually capture the content. And then we at the CMC, when we first did this, we decided, why don't we just go build one? So we took a couple of pin cameras, we built our own rig, we put some duct tape around it, and we started shooting. It actually works. So when people talk about having to spend hundreds of thousands or $1 million to go get a 3D rig, probably not true. But when you start getting into the, how do I compress that 3D video? If you don't have these cameras perfectly aligned, in sync, the color balanced, all of your compression technologies are going to go way off the chart. So capturing the 3D content, it's pretty straightforward, really. I mean, it's just a left eye and a right eye. As you go from the venue, let's say that you do a live events like CBS did, you've got to keep the left eye and the right eye in sync. So what they're doing is they're using technologies like panelizing, cutting the resolution in half for the frame-compatible technologies. But what we're recommending is from the venue all the way to the broadcaster, you probably want to keep that as full resolution 3D video. And we're going to talk about that in a second when we start trying to compare frame-compatible technologies with service-compatible technologies for 3D television. So, live capture we talked about. All cameras in the production, do they have to be 3D? So one thing that we noticed when we did the masters was that there are just some shots in television that don't look good in 3D. So if you were to imagine Lawrence of Arabia, where you've got a camera sitting in the middle of the desert and the camel's 50 miles away, what good is 3D going to add to that picture or scene? When we think about golf and hitting the golf ball up in the air and you're trying to track that in space, does it make sense to really put that shot in 3D? So does a whole broadcast have to be 3D? Or are pieces of the broadcast intermixed with 2D? If you look at what the NBA has been doing, they've been practicing with 3D technologies. And what they've been doing is shooting the game in 2D, and then they do the slow-mo dunk in 3D. So how all this technology fits together is going to be interesting to see as we look to the future. How does signaling work with second encode at the MSO? So this was a cable question that we were going through, and we were trying to figure out if we have multiple encodes, where does the signaling go? So on the signaling side, if you look at the AVC or H.264 specification, so I'm assuming most in the room haven't started to deal with that yet, they've actually enhanced it so that if we're going to put the broadcast out, we can put signals into the transport stream to tell it if it's top and bottom, side by side, or some other type of 3D technology. So you're going to need that signaling to go through the HDMI interface into the television to tell the television how to switch into 3D mode or 2D mode. So like earlier when I was saying if the whole broadcast isn't in 3D, if you have signaling inside of your transport stream, you can tell the television to switch back and forth between these modes for how it's going to display the content, which could become very important when you start thinking about things like inserting advertising. Metadata requirements, so describing what that content looks like, all of that's going to have to be enhanced. So when we look at things like EPG or ESG, are we going to have to put into that metadata anything to indicate whether or not it's a 3D broadcast? Triggers to switch from 2D to 3D, again, same thing. Distribution, so how does this stuff work? If we think of a movie theater creating this huge asset of a brand new movie in 3D, when we send that down the pipe, the movie basically was shot in a studio master. The first thing you're gonna have to do is probably reformat that studio master to fit on a specific theater screen. So that may be something like Real-D technology, that may be IMAX. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of 3D inside the theater. When we talk about mobile, now I'm probably having to switch the resolution in addition to switching the 3D technology. I may be switching the frame rate. So when we start getting into, I've got this asset that I shot for a huge screen, now I'm taking it to a very, very, very small screen. Every single parameter about that piece of video may have to change. It goes through the distribution pipe. And then at the edge, you can see that cable, DBS, the rest of these kinds of people are all adopting their own standards. So inside of cable for frame compatible, cable has adopted for progressive content a top-bottom format, whereas DirecTV is going to use a side-by-side format for all of its content. So, common types of 3D compression. Checkerboard. There's probably 5 million televisions in the U.S. today that can handle checkerboard 3D technology. Nobody's using it. The CE manufacturers have given up on it. Cable doesn't like it because if you try to do VOD, there's no way to create trick files when you do fast forward and that sort of technology. So that's where side-by-side comes into play. So in side-by-side, what we're saying is take the left camera, take the right camera, compress those two technologies and put them on one frame of video. Page flip, that's really a different technology that says, what if I were to put the left frame followed by the right frame, left frame, right frame? And that's really what's happening inside of the television. So when we send that signal out in frame-compatible modes, the television takes that signal apart and puts it back into sort of like a deck of cards, where the left eye goes up, then the right eye goes up. And when we talk about things like shutter glasses, what happens is you put up the left frame and you close the shutter on the right lens of the glasses, then you switch frames and you just keep doing that back and forth. And that's how they're giving you, that's how they're making it so that the left camera's input only goes to your left eye and the right camera's input only goes to your right eye. Over under, cable adopted this because we think it's going to give us better resolution and a better 3D effect. So when you think about HD televisions, there was a reason why they made it wider than taller. And the reason for that is peripheral vision. So as you look across the room, what you'll notice is that there's a lot more information horizontally than there is vertically that you see. So we wanted to put more pixels into that horizontal space. For 1080i content, what we found out was that if you put that content out and frame compatible in a top-bottom format, it's difficult to pull that and load the frame buffers of the television. So that's why all the interlaced content is going side by side. It's just easier to break that signal apart and load it into the frame buffer of the TV. VOD. Cable would prefer to have their 3D content in VOD rather than linear channels. So what you see right now at Comcast is we have two linear channels that are up. One is ESPN 3D, and the other is an occasional channel that we've put up. Both of them right now just have a slate up, and the reason is there's no 3D content out there. So everybody out there right now is trying to figure out, how do I get 3D content to actually generate a linear channel? Whereas if we take that asset and put it out in VOD, it just sits there until somebody streams it. Unicast, in the unicast space, if we come up with 50 different standards for 3D, we can encode our assets in all 50 standards and put all of them into the VOD complex. When you try to create a linear channel, all that content needs to be formatted the same. So we're having this problem right now where we're adopting 1080p 24, we believe, as our formatting for 3D content. How do you get content in 1080p 24? Most content shot by television people today is either 720p, if it's from Fox or ESPN or Disney, or 1080i, if it's from somebody else. Whereas content coming from movie studios is shot in 24p, so all the new 3D TVs support 1080p 24, and that's why we're trying to adopt that as the standard to create movie channels and movie content. Trick file generation, we're not really sure how trick files should work. So when you get into 3D space, if we're thinking about a football game, and if somebody were to throw a football into the audience, now when you fast forward, is it going to come at you five times faster? So is it going to scare the audience by using trick modes? So we're not sure if we should even enable that capability at this point in time. Metadata standards, they're all over the place. 3D advertising. So when we get into the 3D space, let's assume we were doing a broadcast. Do we really need to cut to a break? So do you need a 30-second spot? If I'm watching the football game, is it possible just to pull the Coke can out of the audience, move it in front of somebody so that it takes center stage, and then move it back into the audience again? So the whole concept of what advertising means in 3D could be radically changed. How do you achieve a smooth transition in a break? So one of the things we've been thinking about is that if we take an advertisement and if we panelize it, we should be able to insert that into the content. So for those of you in broadcasting, this gets into how do I capture that content and how do I put it on a playback server if I'm trying to do origination? So if I panelize it before I put it into my playback server, you're going to be stuck with half-resolution 3D video forever. Whereas if you put full-resolution content on your playback servers and sync them up so that you have a left-eye playback server and a right-eye playback server, you can panelize it on the output if you want to go with frame compatible. And we'll see in a second that I'm not sure that that's really going to work, at least not for broadcasters. In-your-face zooming. So what we're getting into this is that once you have 3D, what is the advertiser going to do? Every time you watch the Ford commercial, are they going to drive the truck out of the TV into your living room? How annoying is that going to get? It's like hot audio that we have to deal with in advertising today, where every single time you hit a break, they're trying to use that technology to really get into your face. Compression. So when we talk about compressing 3D video, what's the right technology? When we go side by side and top bottom and MVC, all these technologies are different. So in the United States, what cable decided to do was to basically simulcast. So if you think about ESPN, there's an ESPN channel, and then there's a 3D ESPN channel. For broadcasters, that's just not going to work. So instead of frame compatible, there's this other technology called service compatible. And with service compatible, what you have is the capability to lay down a base layer and then put enhancement layers above it. So MVC is an extension to AVC, and what it was really created for was multiple camera angles. So what it gives you is the capability to go like to a football game and let the consumer pick which camera to look at. Well, somebody said, well, why don't we use that for 3D? So in this technology, you really have the capability to say, what if I make my base layer MPEG-2, and that's my normal 11 to 14 megabit MPEG-2 stream, and then I put my RightEye technology on top of that as an enhancement layer, then my decoder will throw that enhancement layer away if it's a standard MPEG-2 decoder, and if you have an enhanced TV, it should grab that enhancement layer and actually generate the 3D effect. Now, what we're finding with MVC is that if you try to encode that content, and if you don't have the colors and stuff set up right between your left and right camera, your compression's going to go through the roof. Because even though both of these cameras are looking at the same content, they're only shifted by a few pixels, if the color alignment and stuff is off, there's no way for that encoder to get rid of any of those extra bits. Multi-view coding is what Blu-ray is using. There's another competing technology called SVC, which is also an enhancement to H.264. That technology, some of the chip manufacturers are looking at it using that for 3D technology. And MVC and SVC are pretty much the same. SVC was really created to create multiple resolutions or multiple frame rates of the same content so that you could send them to different devices. But people are trying to find ways to use that for 3D. 2D plus depth is another technology that falls into the service compatible. And in that, what they're saying is maybe we send out the depth cues as metadata on a different data PID. Key issues for delivery to television, lack of standards. They're all over the place. It's going to make it very difficult for a content provider to figure out how to encode, compress, and deliver the asset. Lack of deployed 3D displays. There's not a lot of displays out there in the home that have actually been set up ready to go for 3D. Cost of production doubles. So like when we did the Masters, there was a CBS crew on site and an ESPN crew on site. Two trucks, two distributions, two camera crews, two post-productions, two everything, all the way to the television set. Training is another big thing. So what's the work remaining? Interleaving, conversion of side-by-side, the MVC stuff, all those things are in play. 3D signaling's all over the place. There's no standards really defined in that. Bugs, so if you think about putting an NBC logo in 3D content, where do you put it? Do you do it in frame compatible on both the left and the right camera? Do you only put it on one eye? When in that distribution process does it get inserted? Graphics are huge. So how do you do graphics in 3D? Closed captioning in 3D. So where does the closed captioning go? Is it all the way in front of you? If you have an object in 3D and it overlays the closed captioning, what happens to the consumer? So there's a bunch of different groups that are working on this today. So SMPTE's working on this project called 3D to the Home. They just created a brand new working group to try to figure out on the content delivery side how to come up with some standards to deliver this to broadcasters, MSOs, etc. SCTE is really focused on the compression, ad insertion, and some of those type technologies in 3D. ETC is an extension of the University of California, USC, and they've got a great lab out there. So if you get an opportunity, I'd highly recommend if you're interested in 3D to go take a look at what they have. They have devices from all the different CE manufacturers in play. And then DVB over in Europe is creating their own standards for Europe. So that's all I have. Did I go too quick?
I know that you just lightly touched on the page flip approach to creating the left eye, right eye. Has anybody, played around with making that 2D compatible where you would only decode, say, the left eye and then turn it from a progressive scan to an interlaced scan? Or decode only the right eye to go to your 2D set? And if you had a 3D set, then it could read the page flip and produce a 24p.
Yeah, so we've been playing with that internally as well, because page flip is actually the way that it goes from the camera into Avid in some of the post-production technologies. I believe that Panasonic camera may output page flip as well. So page flip works well when you're talking about uncompressed video. As soon as you talk about running that through an encoder, now you get into all the problems of how do I calculate vectors from frame to frame. So that's why you'll look and you'll see that nobody's really come up with a great compression scheme for 3D. So when we panelize this content, what that ensures us is that the left eye and the right eye, the frames are in sync. And we run that through a standard encoder today when we do that, but there's nothing telling that encoder that there's redundant information from the left and the right frame. So that's why inside of cable, when we deliver MPEG-2 content, we do it at 15 megabits. For 3D, we set it at 18.75. So what we did was we bumped it 3.75 megabits because that's how we stack our QAMs. And then we did the same thing when we started to do the H.264 encoding, was that we're going to be putting that out of 7.5 megabits is what we believe in sort of a capped VBR or CBR fashion. We bumped that to 11.25 for the same reason, because when we look at the television, the video comes in really soft. Now, realize that these standards and these numbers that I'm throwing out, we've only done this to about 10 assets so far. So there's not a whole lot of content. This is like in the very beginning of what 3D is going to be. But this is why I'm saying for broadcasters, I don't think frame compatible is going to work at all. So what Sony told you earlier about putting frame compatible on the screen and then pushing a button to stretch that content, to take like the left eye and stretch it across the whole screen so that it would be half resolution, that works, but it only works on the brand new 3D TVs. So if you have a legacy TV, there's no button to say, this is 3D content, push this button, and we're going to do half-resolution video. So that's where I think you have to be looking at service-compatible technologies, because the majority of your customers that are out there have legacy TVs, and that in that space, you need that base layer to service the high percentage of your customers who don't have the 3D TVs. And then if they do have a 3D, to grab into that enhancement sort of signal to give them the 3D experience.
Dan, when you did, over here, when you did the Masters, I think it was, with CBS, right? You did that earlier this year in 3D.
We did it with ESPN.
Oh, okay. But you had to use up three of your channels to do that, one for standard viewers and then two for the 3D viewers? As far as the spectrum on your cable system.
Yeah, so if you look at the Masters specifically, the way we did it was CBS did the broadcast. So they were broadcasting all the 2D content. And we did that the normal way we do today, where we took that CBS signal, they sent it across the country, it went to the local broadcasters, we pulled in the local signals, put it onto the cable plant. At the same time, we worked with ESPN, and ESPN had their own production truck. We backhauled that across our backbone to our facility, and then we recompressed it into multiple formats. So we took it back to the CMC in discrete left eye and right eye mezzanine feeds. So we compressed the left eye to 22.5 megabits. We compressed the right eye to 22.5 megabits. We backhauled all that content into our facility. We synced it up. And then what we did was we panelized it for broadcast back out. And then we recompressed it in both MPEG-2 and AVC, dropped it onto our core backbone. We interconnected with other MSOs so that they could get to that same multicast that we were sending across an IP network. We delivered that to the set-top box. So it went to the set-top box in both AVC and MPEG-2, so our newer generation set-top boxes were grabbing the AVC feed and our legacy ones were grabbing the MPEG-2 feeds.
So did you use over under or side by side or
at that time we did it side by side, but that was because top and bottom didn't really exist at that time. There were no panelizers the first time we went out. Sony was having some issues getting the firmware upgrades. So realize a year ago top and bottom really didn't exist. You know, and this wasn't a year ago. I think we came up with the spec for top and bottom around November we had to send it to HDMI to get them to approve it and to put it into their specification. So all of the new televisions that are out there that are HDMI 1.4a compliant support this frame compatible mode. So if it's just 1.4, it doesn't have top and bottom. I believe it may have side by side, but it definitely doesn't have the top and bottom format.
Anybody else have a question, or I'll just keep going here? That Panasonic camera that you showed with the two lenses, to store that content, if it's not a live broadcast, you have two separate program streams, you need two servers to store the content, or does it come out somehow in a multiplexed format?
So Sony has a new deck and stuff that takes them in discrete formats. So there's a bunch of different technology, but you can write them to disk either as separate feeds, or some of them are doing that page flip sort of technology to write it. But before you send it to the encoder, you need to take it back out. So most of this content's going to an Avid. Avid has the capability to take the discrete left and right eye feed as well. And then you still have the audio issue on top of the video. So, you know, you not only have to sync the left and right eye together, you have to sync the audio into the right spot. And then on top of that, you have to add the SEI data if you're going to do MPEG-4 to tell it whether or not it's top and bottom, side by side, or one of these other formats. So that's just being released into the encoder technologies today. So three of the encoder manufacturers have that released. It's running in our lab, but it's really not out in the general community as of yet.
All right, I think that's it. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks.